Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
And now I am very glad to welcome today's speakers, Chris Hines. Chris Hines is the COO of Equalize Digital, a company specializing in WordPress accessibility. He oversees the business development, human resources, and financial operations of the company and acts as an early stage accessibility consultant for countless organizations who are looking to create more accessible outcomes with WordPress. So someone very prepared to talk about budgeting today. So I'll leave the room to you, Chris. I'll stop sharing so that you can get all set up. And while you do that, I'm just letting everyone know that if you have any questions during the presentation, please drop them in the Q&A box. It makes it so much easier for us to track them. So I'll leave the floor to you, Chris.
All right. Thank you so much, Paula, for that lovely introduction. And thank you all 60 plus of you now, maybe we've even hit 70. I can't see the count anymore, who have decided to be here today. I'm going to do my absolute best to make sure that this is worth your time and worth your attention. So we're going to be talking about, as Paula said, how to accurately budget for accessibility. We're going to be covering essential products, services, typical costs, and how to run projections. And kind of extending on that, I want to go through some of the things that I'm going to take you through in a little more detail before we dive in. So first, we're going to be covering the key reasons why an organization might have no accessibility budget or an incomplete accessibility budget. Then we'll talk about the what I'm going to call, you know, I'm doing air quotes here for our listening audience, accessibility essentials that should receive budget consideration. And we're going to do a breakdown of each essential budget line item, its cost structure, and some basic considerations around those as you're thinking about projections and thinking about kind of gauging what your need is for that line item. I'll show you how to run these projections with answers to a few basic questions, and then you can run the projections based on those answers to get a basic ballpark if you can't go out and get an actual quote, right? And then finally, we'll run through a scenario that I put together that's basically going to walk through a plausible real-world scenario that could exist, and then we will create a mock accessibility budget based on that scenario to try to tie everything together. I think it's equally important to talk about just very briefly what this presentation is not. I am not here to dictate to you what you absolutely have to budget for in 2025. I am not here to shame you if you can't budget for some of these things. And I'm also not really going to dig into, quote, compliance with accessibility laws. This is purely about budgeting, compliance and WCAG conformance, and all of those other considerations are kind of a separate discussion that obviously very much relates to this, but this is purely about budgeting. And my hope is that giving you these tools, you can set some very clear financial goalposts for 2025 and make progress on accessibility, because that's really what's important. So why do this presentation? This year, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people who work at all sorts of organizations. And on this slide here, I have an image that shows four wooden figurines, each with a speech bubble above their head. These people that I've spoken with are employees or leaders at universities, public sector organizations, nonprofits, massive web agencies with hundreds of employees, and major household name WordPress plugin companies. I have also spoken with an equally large number of small mom and pop businesses, boutique marketing agencies with like two or three employees, and solopreneurs working in the digital space. And in fact, totaling kind of all that up and reflecting back on the year so far, which is almost over now, I've had about 150 conversations with organizations across all of that spectrum about their accessibility programs at some level. Of that group, I would say about 60% of those said they had no clearly defined budget for accessibility whatsoever. Another 30% had a rough accessibility budget, but there were some obvious gaps after we started to have deeper conversations. And only about 10% of those I spoke with had what I would describe as a well-defined accessibility budget that covers the scope of what we're going to talk about today and factors in the business activities and ties those back to the budget and what needs to be made accessible, what needs to be evaluated, et cetera. So, considering these statistics, we are faced with this obvious question: why do most organizations fail to budget for this effectively? Well, there are really, I think, four key reasons that kind of are the also represent a progression of where someone is or where an organization kind of is on their accessibility journey from a financial standpoint. Where most are starting that have no budget is accessibility is this totally new concept to them, and they are gathering information. The next level is they're aware of accessibility on some level, but there's no in-house champion that's building out or trying to start a comprehensive program. So there's no internal will behind that, but there is some knowledge. The next level is accessibility is being championed in-house, but there is a lack of buy-in from leadership. And I think I saw someone reference that in the chat. We're going to dig into that more. And finally, there is enthusiasm about accessibility at all levels of the organization, which sounds ideal and great, but there are budget gaps due to misinformation or a lack of funds. So either there just isn't money to support this cause that everybody's championing fully, or people have been fed misinformation and they don't know what they don't know. And so they think they have accessibility covered, but once an actual expert gets in and starts talking to them, they think they're doing their best, but they actually learn that they could be doing more or that they've omitted something, not out of negligence or anything, anything like that. Just they haven't been educated, right? And this is kind of the cold hard truth of the matter, which is an organization's budget is the purest reflection of its priorities. And on this image, I have what I thought was a really clever photograph of a pair of shoes sitting in a puddle on top of asphalt on an overcast day. And you can see the shadow of a person reflected in the puddle on the asphalt underneath the shoes, but there's no one actually occupying the soles of the shoes. So it's this really interesting what lies beneath the surface type thing, right? An organization's budget is the purest reflection of its priorities, right? Now, am I saying that means you have to drop 25% of your entire annual budget on accessibility to be doing this? No, that's not what I'm saying. It couldn't be further from the truth. What I am saying, though, is that if accessibility is not represented in an organization's budget, it will never be a priority. It's really that simple. So let's go into some accessibility essentials. Depending on what your organization does, you may or may not need some of these, and we'll get more into that later on. But I do want to run through these and basically read the slide. So we're going to start from the top. The first is automated testing tools. We're defining these as software that performs tests to identify accessibility defects with little to no human intervention. The next one is accessibility auditing. These are all budget line items, right? Accessibility auditing is human evaluation to identify a more comprehensive list of accessibility defects. Usually that's against accepted standards like the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. Next is accessibility remediation. So this is fixing the accessibility issues identified during an automated test or an audit by altering the source code or content according to expert recommendations. Then we have captioning, transcription, and audio description. These are creating text versions of audio content in the case of captioning and transcription, or narrated descriptions of visual elements, aka audio description for video for the purposes of accessibility. Then we have ASL interpretation, which is translating spoken language into American Sign Language for the deaf and hard of hearing community, typically accompanying a video or maybe an audio recording. Then we have doc and PDF accessibility, which this is ensuring that text-based documents are designed and formatted to be accessible to users with disabilities, including those who use screen readers. And then finally, we have training programs. So these are programs that are designed to provide reference materials, resources, and direct hands-on training to staff members to help them understand and implement accessibility best practices in their day-to-day. These are what I would consider the essentials in a year one accessibility budget, again, somewhat dependent on the activity of the businesses. We're going to now break down each one of these individually in much more granular detail. So starting again from the top of this list, automated testing tools. We're going to consider these a variable cost. And I think for maybe people who aren't as big into, you know, accounting nerd terms as me, if you're not familiar with the concept of fixed or variable costs, essentially a fixed cost is something whose cost is static or it does not change over the course of a year. A more typical business example might be something like rent. Whether your business is, you know, going gangbusters and has tons of people coming in and out the door, or you're, you know, dead and nobody, you have no foot traffic, your rent isn't really going to change based on your business activities or what's going on. Whereas a variable cost will change based on the business's activities to a degree. Some of those variable costs are a little bit more variable or a little bit more elastic. Others are a little more rigid, but there is typically a cost output versus the business input that shifts with business activity. So that's a very quick fixed versus variable cost definition for you. So these automated testing tools, I would call them variable. That is quite a cost range there, right? We're going to go more into how to project that and narrow that down, believe me, but there is quite a cost range with automated testing tools for accessibility. Some considerations here are the costs, no matter what, are generally going to scale across one or multiple variables. Those are typically maybe the number of websites or domains, the size of the websites, the frequency of automated tests needed, software that uses an external server for scanning. So think of this like if you've ever heard of Siteimprove or Monsito or one of these other API-based scanners that will hit your website externally and then provide reports on their platform. Those are typically the most variable in terms of cost because your cost could increase or decrease dramatically based on multiple variables, not just one or two. And generally, it scales up fairly rapidly. The other version is software that runs on your own server or your own computer, or even just as an extension of your browser, right? And that may still have some variability in terms of cost, or some of them are even free, but the cost could still go up or down depending on if you're paying like a per site licensing fee, or if you have to just pay maybe a per user licensing fee to be able to use the software that is otherwise self-hosted. So there is still some variability in cost based on the business activities, but it's not as extreme as something that is hosted on an external server. I do want to be clear, though, that I'm not trying to present either of these as like an advantage versus disadvantage. I think that they all have their own place and their own use cases. This is more about just helping you understand, you know, if we're prioritizing less or more variability in cost, what choices might I shift my thinking to, essentially. Next is accessibility auditing. I generally consider this cost to be a fixed cost, and we have a cost range here of between $1,000 and $15,000, typically. And an accessibility audit should be able to be quoted in advance at a fixed price. Full audits, usually we see them taking place every 2 to 3 years, provided other monitoring methods are taking place between the audits. And the price of an audit will really depend on the size of the website or the sample size that needs to be audited, which is derived from a site's perceived functionality and complexity as perceived by the expert that's putting together the estimate or the scope. The sample size, in my experience, as someone who quotes many, many dozens of both small and large accessibility projects every single year, will range between 1 and 20 pages, possibly higher for large web applications. And we have seen that. And some vendors won't estimate based on unique pages as a sample. They'll actually be more granular and they'll estimate based off of individual unique components. Both are totally legitimate. It's just a different way of doing things. And any reputable accessibility vendor will be able to provide you a fixed price up front, and they'll be transparent about how they arrived at their estimate, or they should be transparent about how they arrived at the estimate, the areas of the site they're going to evaluate, and what their evaluation methods will be. So this is accessibility auditing, fixed cost, 1 to 15K typically. And we're going to go into more detail on how to estimate these, but this is just to give you kind of a primer. Next is accessibility remediation. This is another fixed cost, and the cost is really dependent on the audit results that you get from our previous slide, right? So we have accessibility auditing. We have to know what the problems are. And I went back a slide there. And then following an audit, we have accessibility remediation, which is typically based on the findings of an audit or some sort of evaluation that was done. A reputable developer should be able to deliver an accurate estimate by reviewing an audit report that has sufficient levels of detail of all the issues, their locations, and the required fixes. And if you carefully consider the vendor's approach and experience, I think you should be able to tell, you know, does this vendor have experience with my particular website makeup or software stack or CMS? You know, does this vendor frequently remediate WordPress websites, or does their website say they do accessibility for Wix, right? There's some sort of that basic vetting that you can do. And if anything is unclear as you do that vetting, ask questions. You know, ask them about their experience with some of the particular tools that your website uses. Ask them about their methodologies and how they would go about making the fixes. Are they doing everything with JavaScript? Are they going to recommend that you switch out your theme, right? There's a lot of considerations there, and you want to make sure you have some transparency around what their approach is going to be, at least at a high level. And your in-house team, this is important to anticipate, may end up being involved in the remediation process in a limited capacity, particularly if a lot of the accessibility issues are coming from a site's content and not its building blocks. And I think this is logical if you have an in-house team who's been trained up in the use and maintenance of your website and making basic content changes, that you would probably rather have your in-house team, for instance, putting alt text on images or changing the order of headings or making sure that links aren't ambiguous versus paying an external vendor, you know, $150, $200 an hour to do that very basic work. That's not to say it doesn't make sense all the time, but it's something that you should try to anticipate, is that there may be some involvement from your team for the more basic remediation tasks, which I think is also just a good habit building thing. And finally, in terms of estimating accessibility remediation, if you are trying to estimate these costs before you have an audit done, I think a good rule of thumb is to take what you've budgeted for an audit, assuming that that budget range that you've assigned is reasonably accurate, and multiply that times about 1.25x to basically get a base remediation cost so that you have something there as a line item if you don't have an accurate estimate yet. Obviously, for all of this, it's good to get an accurate estimate for a professional, but if you're trying to just put together a reasonably, you know, a reasonable within the realm of reality, right, accessibility budget, that rule of thumb is one that you can use that will set some clear and reasonable expectations as far as what that might cost.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
Captioning and transcription. This is another variable cost. The costs can range depending on the level of complexity of what you're having captioned or transcribed or audio described, as well as if it's, you know, being done live or in post-production, if someone has to be on-site versus off-site. There's a lot of considerations, but these ranges, I'll read them out. Captioning is usually, again, with those variables, between $2 and $10 a minute. Transcription is between $1 and $3 a minute, typically. And then audio description is between $15 and $30 per minute. The cost of providing text alternatives for media is tied directly to the quantity of media you're producing and the complexity of that media. So if an organization has like this archive of media, right, which we see frequently in our remediation projects with no text alternatives, say there's, you know, 500 old videos that are sitting on a resource archive somewhere, there will be an upfront cost associated with rolling this out because there is a backlog of media that needs text alternatives produced before or while you're also producing text alternatives for the media you are producing right now. As a real world example, Equalize Digital pays $2.50 a minute for captions and $1.25 a minute for transcripts for WordPress Accessibility Meetup, just to give you an idea. And these cost ranges are based on my own research, what I know our customers have paid for this, and what our own company has paid for this. So this is not, you know, some industry study surveying, you know, coast to coast 500 companies. This is just my own lived experience and what I know the numbers look like from my day-to-day in quoting and managing budgets on projects for not just us, but for the accessibility projects of other companies of all sorts of different sizes. So you can take that how you want, but I think that these are reasonable ranges in my professional opinion. In terms of ASL interpretation, again, this is a variable cost for similar reasons to what we described before for the text alternatives for multimedia. Depending on how much you're producing and whether or not you have a backlog of media that didn't previously have ASL interpretation done, you may have an upfront cost, and then there is certainly an ongoing cost if you choose to do this. So it's tied directly to the quantity of media you're producing and the complexity. If you have an archive of media, there will be the upfront cost. And as a real-world example, when we have ASL sponsorships or sponsorships for Meetup that covers ASL, we pay $150 an hour. So at the top of the range from a local company here in Central Texas to have the ASL interpretation done. Next up, we have doc and PDF accessibility, another variable cost. The cost breakdown is between $1 and $3 a page for the evaluation to be done, and then between $3 and $15 a page for the remediation to be done. The cost of this is tied directly to how many of the documents your organization publishes or makes available for public consumption online. And maybe if you have any sort of backlog of old documents, that would also have to be a consideration, similarly with ASL and with captions and transcripts, et cetera. So the per page fee associated with these really varies based on the volume of pages, the complexity of the content, and the turnaround time, another big one. And in order to reduce costs, some organizations will start to convert their docs and PDFs into web pages or blog posts instead. In fact, this is something, depending on the content itself, that we often advise people to do if they're concerned about egregious doc and remediation costs or potentially archiving, you know, docs that are sitting out there that don't really serve anyone anymore. And as a real world example, this year, we produced a 40-page ebook with a lot of design accents and unique layouts going on. And between the evaluation and the remediation, it cost us $18.75 per page to evaluate and remediate that ebook, just to make sure the work that our in-house designer did was fully going to work for everybody that wanted the ebook, you know, capital E, everybody, right? And then finally, we have training programs. These are another fixed cost. You can get them quoted in advance. The costs are usually between $1,000 and $10,000. And there are different types of accessibility trainings available. So for the purposes of this presentation, what I'm thinking of when I say accessibility training is something more intensive, like a full day accessibility workshop for your team, and not necessarily just like a 1 hour canned presentation. The cost ranges will vary based on the size of the group, the complexity of the subject matter, and if you're doing it on site, the trainer's travel and lodging expenses, and of course, whether or not that workshop had to be basically custom built for your specific training needs, which means there was a lot more prep time up front versus teaching on a more general accessibility topic like intro to accessibility or accessibility considerations for WordPress or, you know, other things like that that are just more general. And a reputable trainer, like I said, should be able to give you a fixed cost for the workshop up front and also provide specifics on what exact knowledge they're going to impart on your team. Definitely don't sign up for a training if you don't know what you're going to learn, right? Which kind of sounds like common sense. And yes, Gary commented about cost for class accessibility and reasonable accommodations. That certainly would be factored into it. And that would be, I would think, depending on the training situation, something that the trainer should be bearing in terms of cost and that they should have factored into their fees if they're the ones facilitating the training virtually. And if it's done in-house, then obviously that's on the business to make sure that their facilities and all of their equipment are going to provide reasonable accommodation for everyone. So the next question that I think some people ask is, should I bring accessibility in-house for some of this? Because some of this sounds kind of expensive, or I didn't think of XYZ, right? Could I just have one of my team members do it? I think there's a series of kind of tests or questions that you have to go through in order to really know the answer to that. First is scope. So does the accessibility work that I want to assign this team member reasonably fall within the scope of their role? The next is effectiveness. Is the team member capable? Do I reasonably think, right, that the team member is capable of delivering a roughly equivalent result? Then there's efficiency. Will the team member complete the job at a similar pace or potentially faster? And there's, of course, the direct cost. So based on how long this team member might be spending doing this and what I know I pay them, will the in-house labor to do the work cost less than what the expert charges? And then finally, there's the opportunity cost of bringing it in-house. So is this the most valuable use of the team member's time in the context of bringing value back to my company? Or is there something maybe that they could be doing that would bring more value and therefore it makes sense to just have an expert, external expert handle it? I think it's important to have clarity around the in-house discussion is really not all or nothing. So you could certainly, and we do this at Equalize, fulfill some parts of this yourself and rely on external experts for other parts. For instance, the person captioning this event right now is not an Equalize Digital employee. We could maybe ask a team member to try to caption this, but they're going to be less effective, less efficient, probably more costly. And there's an opportunity cost there as well, right? So in that sense, it made sense to bring in an expert to do that work. But whether you want to delegate captioning or you maybe want to assign an in-house team member to take on remediating your website's content for accessibility and fixing those low-level content issues, these are the questions to ask first. And if the answer to most of all or all of the questions that I've posed here is yes, it very well may be a good idea to bring some parts of accessibility in-house and delegate them to your team. But I've heard people say before that bringing accessibility in-house eliminates cost. And I want to be very clear that handling accessibility in-house doesn't make the cost go away. It just shifts the cost to a different part of your P&L statement. And my point here is not really that moving accessibility in-house is a bad idea. In fact, it can fundamentally be a really good and cost-effective decision in the right situation. But I want to dispel this notion that bringing accessibility in-house erases accessibility costs. So now we're going to get into some projections. So we've run through the definitions, we've run through costs and considerations for all these. And now we're going to talk about, again, moving in that top to bottom order from the original list of definitions, how I would go about projecting some of these costs. So first up, we have automated testing tools. there's really three options in my mind. First are free automated testing tools. So that's using a tool like Wave or Equalize Digital's free plugin to run some basic automated tests on your website. That is a $0 line item other than the time of the individual person on your team who's using that tool to evaluate and recording or reporting on what is coming back in the findings. Next are what I call self-hosted tools. So these are the tools that you either have as installed software on your computer that you're running yourself, or it's installed on your server in the form of a plugin that doesn't call any sort of external API or external connection. And those typically have either a flat licensing fee that's just based on the number of sites. So it's fairly rigid, but still a little bit of variability if you start to add more websites or add domains or things of that nature, or you multiply basically the number of sites that you're going to install this on by the per site cost. So that is how you would go about projecting that. And really the only way you're going to get an accurate per site cost, of course, is to go to the pricing page of whatever self-hosted software tool of choice that looks good to you and to find out what they charge for licenses and then write that into your budget. I can't really give you a rule of thumb there because they range. I can tell you that, you know, for a single site plan of Accessibility Checker, our tool, for instance, for the premium version, it's $144 a year. So you could write that into your budget and multiply that times the number of sites if it's just one or two, or you could go to larger plans. We don't need to get into that whole thing, but you get the idea. There should be clear and public pricing information available for many, if not most, of these self-hosted accessibility tools. And then there's external tools. These have a lot more variables. And I'm speaking again from lived experience of having used these kinds of tools before and having worked with organizations that use them. Typically, there is a base cost of the number of domains that are being scanned times a unit cost. And then you add on the number of pages that are going to be scanned times a per scan fee. Sometimes you have a few scans bundled or included. Other companies don't do that. And then there will be an additional multiplier based on the number of scans you're planning to run throughout the year. So you can see this can really stack, especially if you have a lot of pages and you need to run scans really frequently. It can get very expensive. That's why you saw in my original slide showing the cost ranges, we were $0 to $50,000, right? And it could even go higher than that. I know organizations that are paying these external tools in excess of six figures every single year. And those tools have advantages. They're not necessarily ripping anybody off. It's just, it is a way of fulfilling this need that is maybe a little less cost efficient, depending on how the organization is made up, what their web footprint looks like, and what their needs are. So that is projections on automated testing. Next, we're going to talk about projecting audits. The real question to ask here first is, how many websites do I need audited? Now, some organizations have, you know, six, seven, nine different websites that they're managing. I was speaking to a winery literally the day before yesterday in Central California that has 49 websites for all of their different brands, but they're one company. So maybe your answer to this is, I have one website. Maybe it's a much larger number, but you need to know the number of websites you're auditing. And then you need to ask yourself what the relative complexity of each of those websites are. Maybe you can set up a basic spreadsheet where you put all the URLs and then you put your assessment of what you think the relative complexity is to get a budget ballpark even before you go to somebody like me and get a comprehensive quote. This is what I think a good guideline is. And this is based on what I have heard other organizations tell me they've paid for audits from other providers and what I know we charge for audits and kind of doing an amalgam of the two. So this isn't our pricing or anything. This is just kind of a law of averages, if that makes sense. A small website with 3 to 5 pages total, you might be looking at $3,000 for an audit. A medium website, 8 to 15 pages roughly, you might be looking at $6,000, and any large websites or e-commerce, it can easily hit five figures. And that's how you can do a baseline estimate, and you can tally up your websites, tally all that up, and you know what, if you wanted to audit everything, what it would roughly cost, and you can start to set some financial expectations there. Next, let's talk about remediation. So, what is the number and approximate cost of the accessibility audits I will have done right? So if I go back, we just established the number of websites we're auditing, and hopefully we put them into these three buckets at the very least. And then I can take that and I can apply that 1.25x rule of thumb that I mentioned earlier for estimating remediation. And I can assign some sort of remediation budget to a website. So if I am a company with one mid-size, moderate complexity website, my base remediation costs after the audit are likely to be about $7,500. Next, running projections on captioning, transcription, and audio description. So again, we're asking ourselves questions. We have to kind of think through what our company is going to be doing or what we're going to be doing as individuals. So first question to ask is roughly how many minutes of video or audio content am I going to produce? And do I have a backlog? If I have a backlog, how much is that? And then what text alternatives will I provide for my videos? So do I aspire to provide that full list that I shared, or am I going to start smaller and work my way up, right? And then essentially we multiply our number of minutes by an average total per minute cost. So for example, if we are producing 8 hours of video in a year with captions and transcripts only, no audio description currently, then we're paying maybe $4 a minute, seems like a fair estimate. So the costs are likely to be around $2,000 for the year to caption and transcribe all of that video. Next up, we have ASL interpretation. Similar line of questioning here. Roughly how many hours of video or audio content am I producing in total? Do I have a backlog? How many videos am I producing? And what is the average length of the video? This is particularly important for this. There are really two possible calculations here. One is the number of hours times an hourly fee, or the other one is a number of videos you're producing as a tally times an hourly fee. I recommend using the second calculation if the ASL interpretation is going to be live and the average video length is going to be less than 1 hour, because in my experience, a lot of ASL interpreting providers have a 1 hour minimum. Some even have a 2 hour minimum. So if you're doing this live and it's shorter form content, not around an hour like our meetup is, you might be paying that minimum no matter how long it is. So you'll have to use your best judgment on which calculation to use for this one. Docs and PDFs. Again, we're kind of going through a similar line of questioning with this, but it's a little different. So roughly how many docs will I produce in total? Do I have a backlog? And then best educated guess, what is the average doc length that I produce? With this, it may be a little hard, but I would aim high, right? Just to make sure you're covering your bases. And am I planning to do the remediation in-house versus having an external expert fix the problems in the doc? And then finally, are there any docs, as I think about the docs that I'm going to be producing this year, that could reasonably be converted to web pages or blog posts, or just completely archived in the terms of my content backlog, right? So instead of remediating, could I archive some content that's sitting out there that actually isn't serving any purpose and nobody's even looking at it? And therefore it would probably be a waste of resources to remediate it. Maybe I just take it off the internet entirely. And then if someone asks for it, I can provide them an accessible version on that point if they need that. And then I think based on these series of questions, you can kind of arrive at this kind of calculation, which is the number of total docs minus any docs you're planning to archive or convert times the average number of pages to arrive at total number of pages that you would need evaluated times the average per page fee. And that per page fee would either be for auditing or evaluation only, or evaluation plus remediation, depending on if you're doing the remediation in-house. Next, we have training programs. And this is the last one. And then we're going to go through a scenario. So how many accessibility workshops would I like my team to attend in this coming year? That's the first question. Do I expect these workshops to cover more basic or more advanced accessibility topics? And that might require a conversation with your team, or if you're at a larger company, a conversation with the, you know, managers of departments to get a feel. And then how many people from my company will attend this training or this workshop? And then finally, reaching out to 2 to 3 vendors to get competing quotes is always what I recommend. But absent that, or if you need to do a quick calculation, I think generally, again, law of averages, the number of planned attendees times about $150, I think kind of captures a reasonable baseline expectation for accessibility training. You will probably have some variance over or under that depending on your headcount. But I think it's a good place to just have something in the line item so that the money's allocated so that you can figure something out and not just do nothing. So let's put it all together. I'm going to read through a scenario basically that I made up, but it is based on real conversations that I've had this year. So here we go. I am running a middle of the road small business with a physical location near downtown in a mid-sized US city. My business does about $500,000 in annual revenue. We have about 6 employees. According to national averages, that's about the average, right? We have a small brochure website and do a fair amount online to try and drive more foot traffic to our business. And we produce about 1 hour of video content every single month to post on social media. We also update text and images on parts of our website a couple of times each month. And I'd like to add more content to the website if I can, except for PDFs. I hate PDFs. I don't like creating them or dealing with them. So no docs. The agency I work with isn't sure if the website is accessible. Neither am I. Next year, I really want to make sure I'm covering all the basics and we can continue to gradually improve from there. Let's translate that to a budget, which I have done. So this business probably would be well suited since they have just one website and their website has some activity on it, but not a lot. And they're not, you know, a huge company, a self-hosted tool, which I just line itemed as $150 for a one-site license fee. Then we know that they have a small, simple brochure website. So we're going to budget $3,000 for an initial audit. And then using that 1.25x rule of thumb, we're going to budget $3,750 for accessibility remediation. We know they produce 12 hours of video a year. So using a basic calculation, we get to $2,880 for video captioning and transcription. They want to start where they can. They want to do better. Maybe they'll roll out ASL interpretation eventually, but they're not going to do it right now. So that line item for ASL interpretation and audio description for their video is zero currently, but they're going to reconsider it in year two. Right now, they're trying to make progress, right? And docs and PDFs, they don't really touch them. So that's zero. They have 6 employees, so their training program cost, if we use that base $150 calculation, is going to be $900. And if we put that in the context of their revenue, that means their year one costs for accessibility are about 2.1% of their annual $500,000 in revenue. So for an organization like that and understanding what I understand about business and margins and the type of business they are, that might eat into a significant portion of their profit margin, or maybe not. It all depends on the business. But I think what we're not really accounting for, and what I can't account for in the time that I have here, really, is the additional benefits that they're actually going to get from observing these best practices, because budgeting for accessibility is not pure cost. You get real benefits from this in terms of SEO, increased traffic, increased conversions. There's a litany of others. Again, we can't really get into detail here, but just one more: adding transcripts to the website and cross-posting captioned video to the website is an easy way to quickly expand content footprint for businesses that produce video. So right there, your captioning and transcription can actually improve your SEO, give more content that's going to draw people to your website because search engines will scrape that, crawl that, and output it in SERPs. And it's a great way to expand that reach. And what I've really gone through today is year one accessibility considerations. One thing we didn't really talk about is ongoing user testing and monitoring services for accessibility. These, though, you should be aware, should cost substantially less than auditing. So year two, maybe even year three, I would say the rule of thumb would be to take that year one auditing budget that you have and multiply it by about 0.25 to get what I consider a really solid user testing budget. You might even be able to budget less than that, but I'm going for solid, right? And this makes sure that your user testing budget in years where you're not auditing reflects the size and complexity of your website. But bottom line, once you get to year two and out of this year one cycle, your budget should drop a good bit for accessibility, provided nothing major has changed, like you didn't build an entirely new website or double or triple your video production. Your accessibility budget should go down. And in years three or four, where maybe you are re-auditing, hopefully remediation costs will be far, far lower because your team will have been trained, because we budgeted for training. Training really does pay for itself. We've seen it time and again. And I want to finish with this thought, which is that accessibility is not an all or nothing thing. So prioritize progress over perfection. So can't pay for the full accessibility audit, still do the audit, just lower the scope. You'll still make progress. Can't audit 5 pages, audit 1 page, right? Can't pay for monthly scans for an offsite scanner because your website is too massive, switch to a self-hosted scan, or keep using the offsite scanner, but scan quarterly instead of monthly. Can't find the money to do captioning, transcription, and audio description and ASL for all your videos? Start with just captioning the first year. It's 100% better than doing nothing at all, and you can always roll out more later. So here's my general ask as we wrap this up. And as you're out there budgeting, I want you to try to see out there if your colleagues, your fellow business owners, your fellow department heads, whoever they are putting genuine effort and funds behind accessibility and it's showing. Try to shout them out, try to compliment their efforts while still telling them maybe some ideas of where they could improve. We can all advocate, but we can all also congratulate and compliment one another if we're putting in genuine effort and we are having our budget reflect our priorities in terms of accessibility. Thank you very much. I am happy to answer as many questions as I can in the time we have.
Thank you, Chris. That was a very insightful presentation. I love seeing all the numbers and the quotes and the math in there. So that was really good. We did get a few questions coming through while you were presenting, so we can just start going through them. Sure. So Diane asks, I know Equalize Digital is very careful to make sure the transcript captions are absolutely accurate for videos. For the average company uploading YouTube videos of, say, board meetings, YouTube does a pretty good job of providing those. There might be minor mistakes with the spelling of a speaker's name, but usually the content is correct. How important is it legally to really fix all mistakes on those videos?
I am not going to get into legal stuff. I think that the most important thing to understand is it's important with any automated solution to validate that it's actually doing what it says it's doing. This applies to automated alternative text for images, automated captions or automated transcripts, or even, you know, what one we talk about often sometimes, which is accessibility overlays, right? Which have been proven to not do what they say they're going to do when frequently tested. So I would do your own testing, your own validation, your own discovery. And I would spend a little time if you're uploading those board meeting videos or whatever video content is, and just take the time every few weeks or few videos as a starting point, listen to the video carefully, read the captions as the video is going, and note how many mistakes it's making, and make note of whether those mistakes are immaterial or material to you. And that's subject to your interpretation, right? Depending on the organization, it might really matter if the automatic captions misspell someone's name. To another organization, maybe it doesn't, right? But you definitely want to make sure that the information that is being conveyed in the text alternative is going to deliver the same experience that your typical audiovisual user is going to get.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I'll pitch in a bit. As a content creator, I would say automated tools, when it comes to AI generation, I feel like they are a start when it comes to accessibility, content, anything related to that. And it's always good, as you mentioned, just to go through and see what it missed, what it does right, and see how it fits into your business.
We can also, I'll also mention, and I believe we either just released this episode or it's coming in our pipeline on the podcast side, but Amber, Steve, and I had an entire conversation about text alternatives for multimedia and the specific WCAG criteria, but also our own experiences dealing with that, because I also, like I personally on the podcast, do our captioning and our transcription because it makes more sense since I'm already in there editing the content to just go ahead and do that. We talked about the questions, right, that we asked, should we bring this in-house? And that in that instance, the answers were all yes, because we were already in there making the effort. So it made sense for me to do it. But I think in my own experience, there's a lot on that podcast episode that I share that I think you might find really interesting in terms of the types of mistakes that these automated solutions typically make and how they really could matter depending on the type of content you're putting out.
Yeah, and adding to that, yes, that episode is live on accessibilitycraft.com. Going to the next question, Emmy says, "Is are there budget templates that you can share for the for accessibility specifically?"
Budget templates for accessibility. I haven't produced one for this presentation, but I could see that being really useful, and that is a really good idea. So I will probably assign myself a to-do to put something like that together, maybe for our agency partners.
Yeah, that's a great topic suggestion. Vanessa asks, in light of the recent ADA update requiring both websites and apps to be accessible, how are you incorporating app testing and remediation into your company's budget and overall accessibility strategy?
Well, we ourselves don't have a application that we manage in if we're talking about like a traditional mobile app or something that would be on, you know, one of these. I'm holding up my phone. But I do think that you absolutely need to budget for that if your company is putting out any sort of application that ties into your website or ties into what you're delivering. And there are of plenty of accessibility professionals out there that I am sure would love to test your application, provide feedback, and there is an equal or greater number of application developers for mobile and for desktop that would love to make whatever application your company is building more accessible. We're more of a web-focused firm, but we can test things on mobile and we do frequently. That's about the best answer I can give for that. Hopefully it semi addresses your question.
And that is a good answer. I'm going to the next question. Gary asks, have you ever developed any budgets for federal agencies or state and local agencies? Similar results or very different?
I have never been responsible for developing a comprehensive accessibility budget like from scratch for any federal or state agency. I'm guessing there would probably be regulations preventing them for leaning on me for that completely. But what I have done is plenty of, you know, providing estimates and helping them map out what those costs might be that they then take and massage internally and discuss internally. So I'm sure I have had a hand in people's budget writing very frequently because when I am one of the first stops when someone needs an estimate. But I have not formally written a budget for anybody outside of Equalized Digital ever.
And that makes sense. Amina asks, what are your thoughts on using or developing a risk management matrix against digital assets for building a budget? That's a very complex question. Very loaded.
So, I'm not a CRO or a chief risk officer. So, I would have to do some brushing up on what a risk management matrix is to really understand the implications of that question. I'm sorry that I don't know exactly what that looks like. However, if I can answer at a higher level, I think that one thing to pay very close attention to on a risk management standpoint is where the most eyeballs are on the content you're putting out there digitally and prioritizing that first in terms of auditing, remediation, and making sure that it's accessible if one of your primary motivators is just managing risk around accessibility complaints or lawsuits or violations, which I understand is a major motivator for a lot of firms. I think that paying attention to things like Google Analytics, traffic patterns, if analytics on social media platforms or YouTube or others, see where the engagement is and prioritize that first and try to have that reflected in your budget, if that makes sense.
Yep. And we also have another question that says, do you have any suggestions for recordings, especially meeting recordings?
I can speak to my own experience. I know there are a lot of options out there. What I am most accustomed to using and that I think does a reasonable job at speeding along the process if the end objective is to produce accurate captions and transcripts that convey the same experience that a typical user would get, then I would recommend checking out Descript, Descript. It is a desktop application. There may be a web app interface for it too, but basically you can drag your media into it, whether it's audio or visual media. It will, auto transcribe or auto caption it with timestamps. It's also a fully featured editing system where you can slice and dice and adjust audio quality. And you then have the ability to essentially go through and review the transcripts and correct them with a pretty sophisticated set of tools before finally like publishing the content. So it's something that we use internally that I think does a really good job at speeding things up, especially compared to if I'm going to be writing those from scratch, which it would take me way longer if I was doing that. If it's something that you need to do in-house, you might look at something like Descript. You might also look at and speak to some captioning and transcription providers, because honestly, depending on the nature of the meetings you're holding, how often you're holding them, what the content is, how many speakers there are, you may be able to get a really affordable rate that isn't really a big burden on your budget to just have a professional help you with this and don't feel like you have to do it in-house.
Yep. And then Paul says, will there be another webinar outlining the benefits to the clients of using accessibility? I know you touched on it, but sometimes more in depth would be beneficial with selling accessibility to clients who do see it solely as a cost.
Mm-hmm. So I actually did a three-part webinar series with Quickly Hire / GoWP earlier in the year, all about positioning and selling accessibility offers for agencies. If you're interested in that, you can send an email to our meetup email address or to me directly, chris@equalizedigital.com. And I can get you the links for those so that you can check that out. That goes into a lot of detail. The other thing that I have done, if you don't feel like sitting through 3 hours of sales presentations, which I know not everybody does, I did a follow-up on that is a more condensed version that gets really just to all the golden nuggets, at least what I consider the golden nuggets, in partnership with Bluehost and Carrie Dills a little bit earlier this year. That one I can also probably link to a recording. I think Bluehost has a recording somewhere. So if you want to either one of those, reach out to me. I can get you a link. And I feel like, Paula, don't we have some older meetup presentations that talk about this a bit more? I know there's a selling accessibility or a selling clients on accessibility one that Ryan Bracey did that I thought was particularly fantastic, because it was all about educating customers on the actual importance and human impact of accessibility and not just the business metric side of it, like increasing SEO and conversions and the other things we talk about. That accessibility presentation, which would be in our meetup archive on our website, Ryan Bracey, I think, was the presenter, would be another particularly good one to look at if you're looking at some guidance on how to talk to clients about accessibility, or honestly, even for those of you that are like, you know, the internal accessibility champion who's trying to get leadership buy-in, that would probably be a really good meetup to reference as well if you're looking for some sales tactics.
Yeah, and I just posted the link to that meetup talk in the chat. And John asks, the quandary I'm facing as a small agency is your estimated cost for auditing and remediation of a small, in quotes, website can easily exceed what they pay for the website. And another challenge becomes convincing them to invest that amount without any guarantee of being fully compliant with WCAG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a challenge that I fully recognize. And that's one where I kind of go back to trying to get out of the cycle or help your customer get out of the cycle of all or nothing thinking around accessibility. So just because you cannot do the full audit and the full remediation doesn't mean that you can make progress. And if we're concerned again about lowering our exposure to risk and reducing our, you know, accessibility backlog, for lack of a better word, then you can certainly value that idea of progress over perfection. So if you can't audit a full brochure website, audit the homepage and the header and footer, because that's probably what 90% of your traffic is hitting. If you make sure that that's accessible, that gives a solid first impression, and then you can back that up with an automated testing tool that can help you correct a lot of fundamental accessibility issues that may just be in your content and not even in your theme or in your plugins. Is that a perfect approach? Is it the ideal approach that someone who works in accessibility day to day, like myself, you know, would say, yeah, you're doing a perfect job? No, probably not. But I also understand the realities of business. And I think that if businesses can start to just do something versus just throwing their hands up and saying, oh, it's too expensive, right? And I'm not saying this about you personally. I hope you understand that. It's more just trying to just do what you can, move a step forward, two steps forward every quarter, every 6 months, every year, whatever pace you can manage that allows your business to continue to grow and exist while observing these best practices. And there's also the consideration of the benefits again. So there are very real benefits to accessibility. We outlined in some previous answers some things you can look at and talk through with your customers about some of the benefits that they might see with that. Probably more than I can go into here. I hope that gives you something to think about at least. And again, that's not anything like personally directed at you. It's just something to kind of catalyze this idea of, okay, I can't do everything, but what can I do?
Yeah. And adding a bit into that, there is the Web AIM Million report. It's the report that they run every year where they report on a million home pages. And it's very interesting to go into this report because they go into the top accessibility issues in those websites. And most of them can be easily solved with content. Now, an automated tool can help you audit this and find them. And then you would have to go in and rectify them, rectify the errors and the mistakes and the accessibility issues. But that's a great also start point when it comes to WCAG compliance. And now going into the next question, Sharon says, how dependable, robust are the currently available free resources that scan websites?
I mean, one of the ones that I think I mentioned, Wave, we use internally all the time for quick checks for front-end accessibility. That's the web accessibility. Yeah, Paula just linked to it. It's, I think, not all free tools are created equal, but I like to think that Wave is an excellent one. A lot of accessibility professionals use it. Like any free tool, it has its limitations. And then I would also like to think that our tool, Accessibility Checker, is a fairly full featured free accessibility testing tool for WordPress, that if you have a simple WordPress site, you probably never need to go to a paid version.
Yep. And then we also have another question. Thank you so much for this presentation. Are there data-informed resources about return on investment, ROI, of budgeting for accessibility? I believe, but need more data to make my case.
Sure. I totally appreciate that. I know that we have one smaller case study that Amber did in partnership with Highland Community College earlier in the summer this year. They partnered with us. They were under review by the Office of Civil Rights, and we got them out from under that review in about 6 or 7 months by auditing and remediating their website for accessibility. And Amber did do some digging into like Google Analytics and conversions and saw some pretty interesting increases in overall traffic and conversions and outreach to that school for enrollment and things of that nature. If you check our blog, or maybe Paula can find a, Paula already found it. So that case study would be a good one to look at. That's the thing that immediately comes to mind. There may be more that we could dig into, but that's the one I have most closely at hand.
Yep. And then Jonathan asked, where does VPAD ACR generation come in the budget process? Any a special formula to calculate that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't really factor in VPATs and ACRs just because those typically are needs of larger organizations that are fundamentally more likely to have real, you know, established accessibility budgets, because usually, and this isn't a universal truth, but the larger an organization is, the more likely they are to already have that covered. I would say that if you reached out to us and you asked for a VPAT preparation, usually that is a flat addition on top of the audit for the time just to prepare that report, because you basically have the accessibility audit that gives you all the data that you need in order to be able to complete a VPAT or an ACR. There's an additional consideration there on if you're going to try to make some fixes that we then have to go back and retest before the VPAT is finalized, right? That's another thing that a lot of organizations will want to do, so they have a better report to hand off to people. But long story short, it should be a flat fee on top of it, for us, on top of the audit. Usually the VPAT addition is between $1,000 and $2,000, because it takes a couple of days to fully fill that out and validate everything off of an audit.
Yeah. And then Rochelle asks, for small business clients, say 150K per year or less, which is a lot of my clients, the audit cost is going to be a deal breaker. How essential Sure. is that step?
So if you are using only an automated testing tool, which is pretty much what you would be limiting yourself to if you didn't go forward with any sort of audit, you're probably going to realistically have, depending on the tool, between 30 and 40% coverage of WCAG, kind of at best. But again, if we go back to this, you know, idea of all or nothing thinking, what you don't measure, you don't manage, right? And 30 to 40% is better than 0%. So start where you can, even if it's a free tool, and encourage, advocate, or build in a small service package to go in and fix some of these content-related accessibility issues to try to improve things how you can. There are also extensions or things out there for particular WordPress tools or page builders that try to automatically enhance their accessibility by fixing accessibility issues that are in those tools. A common one is, you know, Divi has a pretty poor reputation, for instance, for being not very accessible out of the box, but there are extensions that you can install for your Divi websites that dramatically improve and fix some of those fundamental accessibility shortcomings in Divi source code, so that you don't have to do that yourself. And that's just a matter of installing that extension, doing some quick tests on a staging site to make sure nothing breaks, and then rolling that out to your production environment.
Yep. And then we have, as a follow-up to my previous question, I really like your philosophy of progress over perfection you just talked about, but a recent DOJ ruling gives my clients 2.5 years to become fully WCAG compliant. Organizations affected by this ruling see a hard deadline approaching. Any further thoughts on dealing with that?
Yeah. I mean, if laws and regulators are imposing a strict deadline on you, great case is the EU Accessibility Act on that side of the ocean as well. Any website selling any goods or any sort of bookings, tickets, what have you, directly to EU consumers that has, I think, more than $2 million in turnover or more than 10 employees, either or, has to meet WCAG by June 2025, according to their new law. And it's up to the individual EU countries to enforce that legally. And then in the US, yes, we have the US DOJ expansion of ADA Title II that's going down to the local and district level that's saying, hey, depending on the number of population you serve, you have between 2 and 3 years to be compliant. In that instance, it's the law. And I do value progress over perfection. And I don't think that, regulations existing invalidates the progress over perfection conversation, right? If you know that there is a legal deadline for you coming up, then you have to make progress. And it doesn't make sense to wait if you can't afford to do everything, particularly if there are regulators and enforcers that are going to be, jumping on top of you potentially in a relatively short time frame. So it's something where even if you can't budget for the comprehensive solution, you have to budget what you can, because at the end of the day, if you are faced with lawsuits or with regulatory action or with a funding source threatening to take funding away, in the case of district level interacting with our federal government here in the US because you're not meeting these requirements, it's going to be a lot easier time for you if you can show, hey, I've been trying, hey, I've been putting budget toward this, I've been making progress, here's how I'm measuring, here's what I've done so far, here's what I know I still need to do. This is the timeline I'm looking at. I think that being able to show that you're putting in real, genuine effort and resources behind this, even if it's less than you, again, I'm doing the air quotes, should be putting in, that is still a better conversation than not necessarily doing anything.
Yeah, and I'd like to read two of our comments in the chat to add on to that answer. Steven said, I've had some luck selling the audit and remediation together, and the same person, who is me, is working on both simultaneously. That gives me the opportunity to find sometimes saving steps to get the most out of their budget. And then Isla also says, the real value of an audit, in my opinion, is the manual testing aspect. If you cannot swing an audit in the budget, start looking for people who use screen readers and pay them ad hoc to review your websites. It will cost much less. You will learn so much and find things to fix. Mm-hmm. I think those are great add-ons to the answer there. And then I think this is our last question. FJ Nelson says, we don't like overlays, but how do you approach website owners who insist that an overlay covers them? Are there ways to test overlays for accessibility?
If you're part of this group and attend our meetups regularly, you've probably already seen the overlay fact sheet, but I think that that's a really good place to start. It puts in a much more concise and effective way the shortcomings of overlays. Joel Dolson, who runs the WordPress accessibility team for WordPress Core, put out a absolutely fantastic, relatively short, but I think fantastic article that talks about another fundamental shortcoming of overlays, where he poses the question, if overlays are so great, why are they targeting websites as their target customer and not individual users? Right. And the obvious answer there is that overlays are a product for website owners to feel like they are covering their bases and protecting themselves. It is not a product that's actually designed to serve individuals with disabilities genuinely and meeting them at the point of what their needs are. It is a tool designed to be sold to businesses for business reasons, if that makes sense. So I thought that was a brilliant combination. But even beyond that, I frequently point to people to the fact that, yeah, Lainey Feingold is excellent. Thank you, Gary, for mentioning her. Also, I feel like the statistics that get put out around accessibility lawsuits I always confuse UsableNet and UserWay, and I don't remember which one it is. I'm so sorry. But maybe Paula can find the link or we can drop it in the notes, but there is a, it starts with a U, but there's an organization that puts out statistics around lawsuits. And one of the things that I find most fascinating about the 4,500 plus lawsuits that got filed this year is that around 20% of those lawsuits Thank you, Paula, for clarifying my flub there. It is usable net, not user way. Thank you. But anyway, 20% of the lawsuits that were filed this year that they are tracking were filed against people or organizations that had overlays on their website. Also, Accessibe, which is one of the largest overlay providers globally, is currently subject to a class action lawsuit in New York for breach of contract and failure to do what they say they're going to do for their customers. So I think that there's a lot of evidence and ammunition out there if you can pull a few things together and know where to look, which hopefully we've given you some good starting places there. And thank you, Paula, for the quick work.
Yeah. And this might take us into a segue, but John asks, how in the world would the enforcement division confirm WCAG compliance? Is there any tool they could use to verify cert or certify compliance?
Well, I think that it is largely like the enforcement mechanisms that I'm seeing in the US and abroad have largely been outsourced to the judicial branches or there's just the general population. So it's relying on people to make complaints or to lawyer up and partner with law firms and file lawsuits. But there are other mechanisms for filing complaints. I know that there's in Canada, I think in Ontario, there's a place you can go to file a complaint related to the AODA if you find a website that isn't meeting it. And I know here in the US with the Office of Civil Rights and with and all of that, there are places where you can file complaints through with them against entities that receive federal funding, particularly in higher education. So there are mechanisms to file complaints, but a lot of it is kind of this crowdsourced thing. So they're not hiring, at least to my knowledge, this could change, but they're not hiring armies of regulators to go out there. But I also don't think they have to, because I think that, you know, when you consider that, one in five people, statistically speaking, have some form of disability. Your website's very likely already serving these people or not serving them. And they're increasingly getting more and more ways to compel you to do what you arguably should be doing to begin with. And I don't mean that to sound preachy. I'm just saying what I believe the truth is.
And I feel like that answer would be a great closing thought to this meetup. Again, thank you, Chris, for all the information, all the numbers, and all your very thoughtful answers. And again, we posted a bunch of resources in the chat, and all of those would be on the meetup recap. And thank you so much, everyone, for attending. Chris, any last thoughts that you would like to say before we wrap up the meetup?
No, just thank you everybody for being here. I appreciate your attention and the lovely questions and all the help that I got in the chat, making additional points and sharing links. That's always super helpful because I don't always remember the websites or even names of companies. So thank you all very much for your time today. Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.